Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks so much for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some very important conversations lined up for you. Coming up, we're going to check in with disabled American veterans for National Volunteer Month, which is recognized each April. Then we'll talk to the interim president of the National Environmental Education Foundation about Earth Month, which is also celebrated each April. But first, to get things started, I'm joined by Kamara Jones, Acting Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services. Kamara, thanks so much for coming on the show. And before we discuss some of the initiatives you're focused on, tell us a little bit about the work you do at HHS.
Yes, happy to. And Ryan, thank you for having me on. You've done us a great service in that you've allowed us to come back again and again to share sort of all the good things we have to say about the work we're doing and to make sure people stay up to date on their vaccine. So thank you. But I'll jump into what I do. So as you said, I'm the Acting Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs. I lead a division at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services that is 75 people strong. We are the department's top communication shop. So we oversee the communication shop at the agencies you probably know and love, CDC, FDA, NIH. We have several components of our division. So we have a speech writing team, a social media team, a press team, a web technology team, a broadcast studio, which is where I'm at right now. We also have a public education campaign, which I'm excited to talk to you about today.
So tell us a little bit about that, the public education campaign, which I'm assuming is such an important part of the work you do.
Yeah, so the full name is the We Can Do This COVID-19 Vaccine Public Education Campaign. And it's sort of like having a little PR firm in our division. And they're a little PR firm. They're small, but they're mighty. And they've been tasked by Congress to educate the public about COVID and why it's so important to stay up to date on vaccines, to get tested if you feel like you, you know, have gotten COVID. And to make sure you take any sort of necessary treatments as well. So they've been doing yeoman's work for the past 3 years, all throughout the pandemic. And we really couldn't have spread the message about staying up to date on vaccines far and wide as we have without them. So we're so grateful for them.
So in addition to that specific initiative, now that 3 years of the pandemic is behind us and the public health emergency is ending soon, how are you continuing to reach people with important information about both COVID and the vaccines?
So yeah, so let's talk about April. And April, as you know, is a National Minority Health Month. And the theme for this month is better understanding, better health. And I think that really encapsulates what the public education campaign has been doing for the last 3 years. We have been focused on, here at HHS, reaching people where they are with culturally competent and linguistically competent communications. And so we've been at NASCAR. We've been at the NBA. We've been at Lunar New Year festivals. We've been at HBCUs. We've been at music festivals, pride festivals, making sure people have the latest and greatest information about COVID so they can protect themselves. And so, yes, as you said, we're entering a new phase, or we've entered a new phase. We're no longer in the emergency phase of COVID. And that's thanks to the Biden-Harris administration. That's thanks to Secretary Becerra's leadership. Since January 2022, cases are down, hospitalizations are down, and deaths are down by an average of about 90%. And so we're grateful for that we can, for the most part, live our daily lives or get back to our daily lives. And so, but, you know, we still have work to do, and that's because COVID is still with us. So we want to make sure that folks have the latest information and that they're up to date on their vaccine.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined by Kamara Jones, Acting Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, I know your department recently announced that there are plans to ensure continued access to COVID vaccines for vulnerable people. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is a priority of the Secretary and the President. When the Secretary came into office, we saw that there were disparities, especially when it came to that first dose. There was about a 10-point percentage gap between whites, blacks, and Latinos. We closed that gap because we were reaching people where they are, and we were reaching them with trusted messengers, people that they trusted. And so we want to continue to do that. We want to continue to ensure that we leave no one behind. And so that's what this new $1.1 billion, that's a B, this new $1.1 billion program is about. It's a public-private partnership. You know, some people say, you know, private sector has all the right answers. And other people say the public sector has the right answers. But we know that we really need each other. And so this is a partnership with pharmacies, drug companies, and the federal government to ensure that those who are uninsured still have access to vaccines and treatments for free.
Now, what would you say to people, and I think there are a lot of them across the country, who feel like it's time to move on from so much focus on both COVID and the vaccines?
So one thing I would say is at least tune in enough to make sure that you're updated on your vaccines. Yes, we are in a different place with COVID. We are managing the situation well. But if we know one thing about COVID is that we never know what it's going to do and that you have to constantly stay ahead of it. Even if you think everything's, COVID is over, which it is not. I mean, we still have 250 people dying a day. We would still urge you, especially now, to get the vaccine to make sure you're up to date. What you should also know is that your protection against COVID fades over time. And so that's what really, that's what the vaccine does. It restores your protection. It also helps you among those who get COVID, those who are least likely to get long COVID, which we can talk more about in a minute. But those least likely to get long COVID are those people who have the vaccine. So I would impart that upon those folks who may think that they don't need to get the vaccine or who may think that they don't need to be up to date on the vaccine. And so when we talk about long COVID, we're talking about, I think it's 1 in 5 adults who get COVID report lingering symptoms. So loss of taste and smell, fatigue, and other sort of symptoms that last well past the actual COVID infection. So restore your protection. It fades over time. This is especially important if you're immunocompromised or if you're over the age of 65, which we announced that if you are in that group over the age of 65 immunocompromised, you are eligible for another vaccine if you've already had one.
And then on that note, just to follow up, there's been some confusion about who is eligible to get the latest vaccine, how many vaccines you really need to be protected at this point. So if you can, give us a refresher on that, please.
So one, I would say talk to your doctor because everybody's situation is different. If you are 65 and older, if you are immunocompromised and you've already had the bivalent vaccine, so you're already, at least a few months ago, were up to date, then you can get another to ensure you have the highest level of protection. We now have vaccines for folks 6 months and up. So talk to your doctor, look at your vaccination card and sort of see where you are, and then take steps from there to make sure you're up to date.
Kamara Jones, Acting Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services. Kamara, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I'm Ryan Gorman here on iHeartRadio Communities. And now I want to bring in our next guest. I'm joined by U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Disabled American Veterans Voluntary Services Director John Kleindienst. John, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to come on the show to talk about National Volunteer Month, which is this month, the month of April, and National Volunteer Week, which was this past week. First of all, before we get into volunteerism and all of that, let's start with some information on the work Disabled American Veterans does and how this organization came about.
Sure. DAV is a nonprofit that provides a lifetime of support for veterans of all generations, their families, and survivors. Every year, our no-cost services help more than 1 million veterans access the benefits and health care they've earned while connecting them with meaningful employment and representing their voice on Capitol Hill. As the nation's most resourceful patriotic charity, we've focused on keeping the promise to America's veterans for more than 100 years.
And what about some of the services that you provide? Can you dive into that a bit?
Absolutely. We have a variety of services that we offer. And first and foremost, I want to mention that all of these services are at no cost. We provide benefits counseling with our national service officers for veterans or their family members who are transitioning from military service, and if they may be entitled to benefits, we're able to help them navigate the VA claims process and better understand the benefits they have earned as a result of their military service. We have a robust legislation program where we are advocating for veterans of all generations and eras to ensure that our government keeps up the promise to ensure that our veterans receive the benefits they're entitled to as a result of their military service. And we were very...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
One of the spearheading organizations when it comes to regards to the passing of the most prolific legislation passed in regards to the PACT Act. We also have an employment program that provides employment resources and job opportunities for veterans and their family as they're transitioning from the military service. And we also have our voluntary services program, which is why I'm here on your show today talking about volunteer initiatives and trying to encourage listeners to consider to get out and become a DAV volunteer.
And let's spend some time on those voluntary services, which you head up for disabled American veterans. What are some ways that those listening can volunteer and support the work that you do at your organization?
Sure. DAV is looking for individuals to donate their time and talent by volunteering for DAV. We need volunteers to help operate our transportation network. We started this program back in 1987 when the government did away with funding. And I'm proud to report that to date, since 1987, we've donated almost 4,000 vehicles to VAs all across this country that provide free rides for veterans to and from their medical appointments. They likely wouldn't make it to those medical appointments without this program. We have opportunities for young adults to get out and volunteer on behalf of DAV and start earning hours to a very robust scholarship program that we offer for young adults who volunteer 100 hours on behalf of DAV. We have volunteers in VA medical facilities all across the country that meet and greet veterans as they come in for their care and help escort them around facilities, operate golf carts. And we have individuals who volunteer in the community that take care of their veteran neighbors or their veterans' families' neighbors who have issues that may not be met because of injuries or illnesses, such as tackling the lawn, cleaning the flower beds out, edging bushes, cleaning gutters, to something as simple as changing out light bulbs.
What is the need like when it comes to volunteers to be able to provide all of these different services for disabled veterans?
We're looking for individuals who can just commit to an hour a month or a few hours a month. A lot of these opportunities, like I talked about in regards to helping veterans in their communities, can be done at their time and leisure. It's just an opportunity for folks to really stop and consider all the sacrifices the men and women who serve this country have given for us. And, you know, all of us only have so much time on this earth. It's an opportunity for us to give back something that's going to warm the veteran's heart and warm a volunteer's heart by donating a little bit of time and recognizing the sacrifice that these individuals have made for this great country.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined now by U.S. Marine Corps veteran and disabled American veterans National Voluntary Services Director John Kleindienst. So if somebody wants to volunteer, where should they go to sign up? And is there any other information or requirements they need to know about?
Yeah, if an individual is interested in becoming a volunteer driver or volunteering in general, they can go to volunteerforveterans.org to learn more about how to volunteer. But if you're interested in becoming a volunteer driver, there's four things that I would ask your listeners to consider. They need to be 21 years of age or older, possess a valid driver's license, be insurable, and be willing to take a physical that would be conducted at a VA medical facility in order to meet the requirements as a volunteer driver.
And last thing I want to ask you about, outside of volunteering, because your organization does such important work for veterans all across the country, are there other ways that those listening can help support all the work that you do?
Absolutely. They can go to our website, DAV.org, consider donating some money to help us continue to provide these free services that we offer for veterans and their families all across the country.
Again, the website for disabled American veterans is DAV.org. That's DAV.org. U.S. Marine Corps veteran and disabled American veterans National Voluntary Services Director, John Kleindienst, with us. John, I want to thank you so much again for your service to this country and the incredible work you're doing with this really, really important organization. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate your time.
All right, I'm Ryan Gorman here on iHeartRadio Communities, and I want to get to our final guest. We're joined by Sarah Espinoza, interim president of the National Environmental Education Foundation. Of course, this month is Earth Month, and all weekend long for Earth Day, people are celebrating by taking part in cleanups and doing a number of different activities all across the country. Sarah, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to come on the show, and we've got so much to talk about, but let's start with a little background on your organization, how this foundation was formed, and the mission that you're on.
Sure. NEEF, the National Environmental Education Foundation, is a nonprofit organization that was actually chartered by Congress in 1990 under the National Environmental Education Act with a really big mission, which is to increase environmental literacy for the American public. And our mission is to make the environment more accessible, relatable, relevant, and connected to the daily lives of all Americans. You know, when a lot of people think about environmental education, they picture kids spending time outside. But our work really goes much broader than that. We do work in K-12 education and with young people, but we also work with people of all ages across program areas that span health and conservation. We support volunteerism. We work with companies and their employees around environmental education. So it's really a lifelong focus in helping people connect to the environment in ways that are meaningful to them.
What are some of the issues that you focus on through environmental education?
Sure. So in our K-12 educational work, we really focus on helping young people build STEM skills through environmental education opportunities. And for us, what that often looks like is supporting projects where kids have an opportunity to go out in their community and actually collect data and learn about a local environmental issue, develop their own solutions, have an opportunity to share their ideas and really engage in those skills that they need to be successful humans. Our health work is really focused on how the environment impacts our health, both negatively and positively. So we work with healthcare providers to help them understand the environmental triggers of pediatric asthma and work with parents and caregivers to manage those triggers to hopefully reduce the prevalence of asthma attacks in kids. We also work in building awareness around the health benefits of spending time outside in green space, both physical health and mental health. And our conservation work is really focused on getting people out onto public lands, parks, and green spaces, not just to enjoy those places, but also to take care of them, to volunteer, to give back to the places where we get outside and exercise and rejuvenate. That can be trail building, picking up trash, planting trees, lots of different activities.
Do you find that younger people are more and more engaged in these kinds of environmental issues? It certainly feels like younger people are very active in this space. It frequently comes back in polling as one of their top concerns, care for the environment, climate, things like that, especially among millennials and really Gen Zers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think these younger generations are really in tune to what's happening in their own communities and what they're seeing. I think they're concerned about environmental issues and the impacts locally and globally. And I also think they're really action oriented, right? They want to learn about what's happening in their community and really think about how they can address those issues. And the great thing about young people is that they're all influencers in their own way. You know, they influence right. the behavior of their friends, but they also go home and influence the behavior of their parents. So, but they have a really powerful voice around environmental issues.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined now by Interim President for the National Environmental Education Foundation, Sarah Espinoza. You can find out more about the work they do at neefusa.org. That's neefusa.org. Of course, this month, April, is Earth Month, and this weekend, we're celebrating Earth Day. Many activities taking place all across the country. And Sarah, recently I interviewed somebody who, during the pandemic, was looking for something to do and started making TikTok videos of him going around the community and picking up trash. It was as simple as that, just some TikTok videos of cleaning up beaches and different areas around the community. And he went viral and created a huge following and now puts on huge events with lots of volunteers doing the same thing, has inspired others to do just that in different communities across the country. So when it comes to activating people to take care of the environment, to clean up our planet, what are some of the things you recommend at your foundation?
Sure. You know, we really like to identify small actions, to your point, things that are easy for people to integrate into their lives, but can have a big collective impact. Those can be things like walking or biking to school or work, recycling at home, turning off the tap when you're brushing your teeth. These feel like really small things, but when we all do them, they have an outsized impact on the environment. So we really try to find ways to fit the environment and environmental actions into everyday life.
Let me ask you about technology, because you mentioned some of the tools that we have to track energy usage and water usage. And personally, I've started using a lot of that. I find it very helpful if it's as simple as checking out an app or automating certain things. Hey, I'm all for it. Do you find that those technological advances and those tools, so many of them are right on our phones now, are they helping people pay a little bit more attention to how they're impacting the environment and to conserve and preserve where they can?
Sure, definitely. I mean, we have lots of ways to automate some of those things now. Certainly, you know, turning the thermostat up and down, those kinds of actions that help people kind of set and forget and still take that action. We have a lot more information about the impact of the actions we take. We can see it on our energy bills or our water bills. And there's also great technology out there now that allows people to take an active role in kind of tracking the natural environment where they live. So in addition to the actions they're taking at home, there's community science apps and other types of technology where they can go out and make observations of what birds are showing up in their yard or what time their flowers are blooming in the spring and help contribute to scientific research on a bigger scale with local individual observations. So technology is really important here and has put some tools at our fingertips that can help address these issues.
Now, what are some of the challenges that you see in achieving effective environmental education, your mission, and how can we address those challenges?
So one of the big challenges is that environmental education is not consistently prioritized in our educational system in the United States. So not every educator has the resources nor the training to actually offer environmental education to young people. And I think there's a few ways we can address that challenge. One is to help people understand the importance and the relevance of environmental education. Environmental education and STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math fields are very closely linked. And oftentimes when young people have the opportunity to be part of environmental education projects, they're practicing those STEM skills and also hopefully developing an interest in those STEM fields so that down the road, we're continuing to develop that pipeline that we need for the workforce. So there's that relevance piece. Another big piece is lack of funding. A lot of schools and community organizations need funding to be able to design and deliver good environmental education projects, as well as sometimes support to design those projects in a way that they'll be effective. And that's one of the roles that NEEF is able to fill. In addition to offering programs, we also give grants to local schools and community organizations to support this kind of work so that they have the funding in place to be able to engage kids in these hands-on projects, as well as provide training for educators to understand how to put together a good environmental education project and really implement it on the ground.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined now by Sarah Espinoza, Interim President for the National Environmental Education Foundation. You can learn more at NEEFUSA.org. That's NEEFUSA.org. Increasing public awareness and engagement, I know that's a big part of your mission. How much does Earth Day and Earth Month play into that and help support what you're trying to do?
Well, certainly Earth Day and Earth Month are a time when a lot of people are thinking about the environment and their own relationship to the environment and how they can act. So it's a great opportunity to get messaging out there to people through a variety of channels. Certainly, public awareness campaigns like I Heart Earth that we've been using as an awareness campaign since 2020. Is a way to provide the public with those small sustainable actions they can take. This is also a time of year when we see a lot of companies investing in employee engagement campaigns, really using Earth Month as an opportunity to build awareness among employees about environment and sustainability and engage them in environmental activities that can be volunteering in the community. It could be learning opportunities at work. And then this is also a time where we can really harness the power of social media. Organizations sharing what they're doing during Earth Month, encouraging people to participate in events, but also individuals talking about how they may have changed their behavior or the actions they're taking and using that as an opportunity to start a dialogue or encourage friends and family to join it.
You mentioned corporations a moment ago, and I'm curious, how much more aware have businesses and companies become of their impact on the environment and their role in making sure we take care of our environment?
Yeah, so there's been incredible progress in that space, and many companies have set, sustainability goals tied to their work. They are very invested in employee engagement and ensuring that not just leadership at the company, but all of the employees understand the importance of those sustainability goals, whether it's reducing carbon emissions or saving energy, saving water, and understand how every part or every person in the workforce contributes to achieving those goals. So, over the years, I think we've seen environment and sustainability in companies really evolve from something that sort of sat in its own space to something that's really integrated across the entire company and really integrated into the jobs of all employees.
What are some ways that people can get involved with your organization and support the work that you're doing in particular?
One of the big ways people can get involved with NEEF is we have a large national event in September called National Public Lands Day. This is the 30th annual National Public Lands Day this year on September 23rd. And it's a nationwide volunteer event where people go out and they pitch in to improve parks and public lands from the local all the way up to the federal level. It's a massive event. Last year, we had 1,800 projects around the country and over $6 million worth of volunteer service donated on that one day. So that's a great way for people to get involved. There's an interactive map and information on our website. Another way is really just to learn about what's happening in your own community in terms of environmental education. There's lots of resources on the NEEF website in terms of how to design an environmental education project for young people, There's infographics and articles about these issues, and those are there to help people think about them, but also look at ways that they might be able to bring some of those resources to their own communities.
Sarah Espinoza, Interim President at the National Environmental Education Foundation, here with us for Earth Month and, of course, this weekend, Earth Day. You can learn more about all the tremendous work they do at NEEFUSA.org. That's NEEFUSA.org. Sarah, I want to thank you so much for the work you're doing in this space and for coming on the show and breaking all of that down for us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right, and that's going to do it for this edition of iHeartRadio Communities. As we wrap things up, I want to offer a big thanks to all of our guests and, of course, to all of you for listening. I'm your host, Ryan Gorman. We'll talk to you again real soon.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.